I'm Vermont Edition co-host Bob Kinzel. Just wanted to let you know that this podcast has been edited for brevity. Thanks for listening.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Recreational marijuana might not yet be legal, but there's already a lot of jockeying for position in related businesses that might benefit from a legal market. And there are also other legal, or mostly legal, ways the cannabis plant is being used without the THC to create all kinds of products, from herbal tonics that are purported to lower inflammation to building materials used to construct houses in Quebec. If you want to be the next marijuanapreneur, there's even a competition being held next Tuesday to kickstart a new project that uses hemp or CBD. The Cannabiz Pitch Competition Series, hosted by Hedy Vermont, is going to give $1,000 and some professional development services to the winning Vermont-based business. Now, Hedy Vermont describes itself as a community and digital platform dedicated to Vermont's expanding cannabis culture and policy reform. One company that's already using hemp is Green Empire Brewing, a nano brewery in Colchester. Green Empire is incorporating hemp into a beer called Chill Session. Evan Vicar, co-owner of the brewery, gave us a quick walkthrough of the brewing process.
And here is the hemp. So this is Champ is the name of the strain, and it's high CBD, so it's 9 to 10% CBD, and it's 0.3% THC, so it is compliant. It looks just like cannabis, smells like cannabis, so we use it just as you would hops in addition with the hops. It's very lemon, limey, and earthy. Yeah, we're making lots of IPAs, and our hemp beer is our specialty. So here's where we're brewing. We get bunch of water in here, and we get it up to 150 degrees, and then we add our grain in. So we'll add up to about 170 pounds of grain, and then after an hour, we'll lift this up. And this is basically like a big tea bag. So we're making a huge batch of sugar water. And you can see the strainer here. It's going to drain out after about a half hour, an hour. We'll get that to a boil, and then we'll start adding our hops. And then when we're doing the hemp beer, at 15 minutes out, we'll add the hemp in, and we'll put it in a big bag, a big painter's bag. And then, yeah, after an hour, we'll transfer it in there once we cool it down through this unit. Yeah, after a week, it's all the sugars are converted into alcohol from the yeast. And then, you know, after 1 week, we'll add our dry hop, and then we'll do a dry hemping for the hemp beer. And then once we're all done with that, we fill up our kegs here.
That was Evan Vicar, co-owner of Green Empire Brewing in Colchester. Now, the beer itself contains no THC or CBD. It's just one example of the many ways the cannabis plant is moving into the mainstream, and we're going to spend this hour talking about the businesses cropping up all over Vermont. We're also going to explain the difference between THC, CBD, hemp, marijuana, cannabis, and all the other terminology swirling around out there. Joining me in the studio is Brian Voigt, research professor at the Rubenstein School of Environment and Natural Resources at UVM. He's also chief science officer for the Vermont Hemp Company. Brian, it's nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Jane. Happy to be here.
So let's tick through some of those acronyms and letters and words, and then we all are on the same level playing field for the rest of the conversation. Cannabis.
Sure. I think of cannabis as sort of the umbrella term to include both marijuana and hemp.
So it's the plant. The cannabis sativa plant is what we're talking about.
Correct.
Mostly here. Okay. So marijuana.
Marijuana is really what a lot of people are focused on right now. We have a legal medical marijuana program at the state level, but I think what's captured a lot more attention recently are the efforts at the state level to legalize recreational marijuana.
And so when we talk about marijuana, we're generally talking about the cannabis plant that has a high level or a higher level of THC, the component that can be psychoactive that people associate with the high.
That's correct. Yeah. So the typical user of marijuana is looking to convert that THC into the psychoactive substance that would represent the high feeling from consuming or smoking marijuana.
Hemp.
Hemp is again, it's a type of cannabis. The primary distinction that we see between hemp and marijuana is the THC content itself. So if we're talking about the legal definition of industrial hemp, we're talking about specifically about a cannabis plant that has less than 0.3% THC.
CBD.
CBD is one of the compounds contained within the cannabis plant. It's present in both the industrial hemp version and the marijuana, the either recreational medical marijuana versions of the plant itself. CBD is cannabidiol. It's thought to have a number of different potential uses for medical applications for humans.
And more, it is being used in medicinal marijuana, either alongside or in some cases as more sort of a primary component of the medicine side of marijuana.
Yes. And so it's been used for a number of different medical applications. And one of the nice things about CBD is that you don't necessarily have to smoke the marijuana plant to actually reap its benefits. You can apply it as a topical. It can be made as a tincture. So you're taking it sublingually, drops under your tongue, or mixing it in with a beverage or something like that.
CBD is a component, cannabidiol, as we talked about, that is in a lot of medicinal marijuana, but it's also legal to use and legal to make products with in Vermont beyond the medicinal stage of things, beyond people who have a medicinal permit?
Yes, that's correct.
But you're not allowed to claim curative properties because it hasn't been vetted by the FDA.
That's correct. So it's important to remember that cannabis, generally speaking, is still listed as a Schedule I drug, which means that it the FDA claims and DEA claim that there are no medicinal uses of the plant. So it's important to remember that piece. I think if you look throughout history, there might be some differences of opinion as it relates to the medical appropriateness of marijuana in general. It's been used, as far back as 2300 BC as sort of a curative. I don't necessarily know that it was targeting a specific thing, but they were certainly prescribing, medical professionals at the time were prescribing these substances to cure any number of different ills.
But I mean, it's legal to make, let's talk about food. It's legal to make an iced tea with CBD, not just in the state of Vermont, but that's federally legal, and it's legal to consume that?
That's correct. What's not legal is to claim that the consumption of said beverage will provide you with any curative effects.
On the other hand, hemp, which also contains very little to almost no THC, is legal to grow in Vermont, but not federally legal to grow.
That's correct. So hemp is still, again, part of the cannabis family, still part of that Schedule I classification. But what we've seen over the past several years now is a number of states, in response to the 2014 Farm Bill, either initiating a pilot program to enable the production of industrial hemp, or allowing folks at universities or people in conjunction with universities or a state agency of agriculture to grow hemp and derive products from the crops.
While we're looking at how all of this is working in the state of Vermont and federally, let's turn for a few minutes to Tim Schmaltz, who's a plant pathologist for Vermont's Agency of Agriculture. Hello, Tim. Nice to have you here.
Oh, good afternoon, Jane. Thank you for having me.
So we're talking about, hemp is not federally legal to grow, but Brian was talking about the 2014 Farm Bill, which basically said, we're not going to target communities that are growing this, these kind of test plots, this academic research. How much hemp is being grown in the state of Vermont today?
Well, I don't have a very precise answer to that question. The way the hemp registration program in the state of Vermont works is that individuals or companies who wish to cultivate hemp are required to register with my office and state how many acres they intend to cultivate. So we don't actively track the number of acres that are in fact planted or harvested, but we do have a sense of how many acres people want to plant.
So it's aspirational.
Yeah. And in 2017 to date, we have approximately 575 acres that people are hoping to cultivate.
And that's about 93 people who are registered to do those 500-some-odd acres?
I believe we're up to 96 now.
And you have confidence that the federal government, even under the new administration and even under Attorney General Jeff Sessions, are unlikely to intercede here?
We haven't seen any indication that they are interested in interceding in Vermont at this point. I hesitate to predict what they might do in the future, but so far they've apparently paid very little attention to what we're doing up here.
Brian Voigt, does a field of cannabis being grown as hemp look the same as a field of cannabis being grown for CBD content or for THC? I mean, do the plants look the same?
Yes. Yeah.
Describe what that might look like.
Depending on the strain, you're going to see plants that are long and fibrous. They can get up to 14 or 15 feet tall in a single growing season. Some of the plants that get really large, the actual stalk itself can turn woody, so representing more of a small tree than what we would traditionally think of as a plant that grows over a single season. The leaves and the flowers look pretty much identical between the industrial hemp and recreational medical marijuana as well.
And does it typically grow in rows? I mean, it just looks like a crop of sort of that fast-growing willow that people are growing, for example, for biomass?
That really depends on your approach to growing. So, one of the things that if we look back at sort of history, and we have a long history of actually growing hemp in the United States, and we can talk more about that. But one of the things that is really important to think about is that we've lost some of this institutional knowledge in terms of the production of industrial hemp in the country. And different people use different approaches to growing hemp. So you might see people transplanting. Certainly the high-value CBD plants are going to be started as seedlings in a greenhouse and then either finished in the greenhouse or individually transplanted into nice rows that are lined and have the weed suppression, et cetera, like we would see for what we would think of as a regular farm field. There are also people that are experimenting with open pollination techniques where we're just essentially throwing seeds to the ground and letting it grow as it will, what you would see more like if you're producing hay.
Now, Tim, we talked earlier about the fact that if you're growing hemp, there is a THC maximum level. It can't contain more than 0.3% THC. So who tests or regulates the plants and the growers in Vermont to make sure their THC level is where it's supposed to be?
Right now, the growers of hemp are largely responsible for self-certifying that they are growing material that doesn't produce more than the allowable level of THC. The agriculture lab is gearing up, if you will, to provide testing to law enforcement and to farmers who are interested in having us do it for them. We haven't done any analyses at this point, but we do have authority and are lining up resources and materials to do the actual analyses. There are a number of third-party labs scattered around the country who will do the analysis for growers. And so far, I believe they have been able to meet the demand here in Vermont for THC and other cannabinoid testing.
So there's no concern that that hemp is sort of the exterior of the crop and that inside it's actually a big marijuana growing business? I mean, that's not something that the Agency of Ag thinks is happening with these growers?
It's not something that I'm concerned about in any serious way. The nature of the plant is such that if you are interested in growing high-value recreational or medicinal marijuana, it doesn't do well in the company of industrial hemp simply because the marijuana flowers tend to become pollinated by the male hemp plants, and you end up with a lower quality marijuana product. It becomes seedy and is lower in the important psychoactive cannabinoids than you'd want if you were growing high-value recreational or medicinal marijuana. So the idea that somebody would be growing marijuana inside a hemp field, in my mind and in my experience, is not really reflective of the botanical reality out there.
Yeah, and not a particularly good business plan, it sounds like. Let's go to David, who's calling in from Newfane. Hi, David. Go right ahead.
Hello. I'm sorry about any cellular reception, that may be tricky. I'm out in the field with my animals, but thank you for taking my call.
Yeah, go right ahead. What are you thinking
about? And thanks to Tim for being there as well. Tim, as you probably know, is a huge asset to this state for farmers that are looking to start something new. So big thanks to him as well. My concern is, as a farmer and really debating the thought of cultivation of hemp for next year to try to make some money, I am very concerned about not about the high CBD flower that I could produce, but alternatively, the processing of it. I'm thinking about learning how to process that flower myself and making some cannabis oil, CBD oil from the flower. And I'm concerned that that oil in itself has a higher THC content than is legally allowed. And so if I want to make my own products with that, or if I want to sell that to someone who wants to make products, I'm concerned that that's actually breaking the law. And farming is big in this state, and we all should be supporting it. And I'm concerned that there's it's extremely difficult to make that oil legally. So I'd love to hear a response to that. Thank you.
Yeah, David, thanks for the call. Brian, what are you thinking?
Well, I mean, I think it depends on how the processing is done. And certainly one of these one of the biggest problems that has presented itself with this long gap or lag in time from when we last were regularly producing industrial hemp is the loss of knowledge of processing techniques, processing technology, and the basic equipment that's necessary. So again, depending on your approach to the extraction of the oil from the plant, you might see some additional accumulation of THC within the oil, although with the more sophisticated approaches that are targeting specific elements of the cannabis plant, I think that that concern would be mitigated.
Tim Schmaltz, my understanding is that beyond what David is talking about, there are issues with processing and sort of a bottleneck for hemp farmers in terms of getting their product processed, certainly locally. Is that where the problem is? And not there's a demand for hemp, and there are growers who are ready to grow it, but getting through that processing pipeline.
That's certainly one of the considerations, and one of the things that I'm concerned about here at the agency, Jane. It's often I will get a call from a farmer who wishes to diversify and sees hemp as an opportunity to grow a different crop or to break into another market. And the first question that comes out of their mouth is typically, what can I do with it after I've grown it? And things are not as tight as they were 3 or 4 years ago, but it's still an issue within the supply chain. Where do you send the material? It would be nice to have a much broader manufacturing or processing base in the Northeast and certainly in Vermont. And that's something that we are always looking at here at the agency. What can people do with their crops? I wish I had a quick answer for that. I don't. The other question, of course, is, or the other consideration is, different crops or different intended purposes, different cannabis varieties are going to be grown and processed differently. Someone who is growing for fiber is obviously going to have a much different set of issues facing his operation than someone who's growing for a CBD or some other cannabinoid extract. So there are several aspects of the processing of the intermediate stages of the supply chain that need to be addressed. And I think there are some growing pains that we're going to have to work through in this. As Dr. Voigt rightly pointed out, we do have a considerable lag in this country because of the absence of time the period during which when material wasn't being grown. So a lot of people are still overplaying some catch up, if you will.
Brian Voigt is going to stay with us. Tim Schmaltz, plant pathologist for Vermont's Agency of Agriculture, thank you very much for sharing your expertise.
Oh, you're very welcome, Jane, and thank you for the opportunity.
I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is Vermont Edition. Today we're looking at the industries that are cropping up in Vermont around cannabis. Some people are positioning themselves to be players in a legal recreational weed market, but others are more interested in other facets of the cannabis plant, from hemp ropes to CBD iced tea. Brian Voigt, research professor at the Rubenstein School of Environment and Natural Resources at UVM, is with us today, helping to guide the conversation. Let's go to Bill, who's calling in from Johnson. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hello to your guest. Being that hemp is a native species in at least the Champlain and Connecticut valleys, documented by Samuel D. Champlain in his journals, clearly it's the right place for this. My concern is that modern strains that would be utilized may be different enough that they have the capacity or potential in certain habitats, for instance, riverine habitats, to become invasive. And I just want to be reassured that where we plant them, if they have that capacity, they'll be well controlled. Can you speak to that?
Sure. I think that it's certainly possible for the plant to become invasive. I've personally been to a farm in Colchester where they're not actively growing hemp, but we had learned about the existence of hemp plants on the field, and no one's actually sure of the origin of those plants. And so if we let the plant itself go to seed and don't harvest it, the seeds fall out of the flower, they will continue to grow over time. Similarly, if a bird or some other animal eats it, it could be transported that way. But it really depends, you know, fast forward to the present day, it really depends on the kind of strain that you're growing and the purpose that you're growing it for. So if you're growing an oilseed variety, it's in your best interest to harvest before those seeds hit the ground, because all of the money associated with that crop is actually in the seed itself. So again, it depends on the where and the why, but it certainly has the potential to spread. I think it's just something to be more careful and cautious about.
Do we also have to worry about what we were talking about earlier, that idea that it could actually contaminate other cannabis crops? So if you're growing, I mean, right now, most medicinal marijuana is grown in very controlled environments, and a lot of it is sort of indoors or in greenhouses. But if we got to a point where recreational marijuana was grown outside by large numbers of people, either as a cash crop or just sort of really recreationally by home farmers, could we get to a point where hemp is sort of contaminating the marijuana plants and messing with people who are trying to grow it for THC content?
Well, I think it depends on which side of the production fence you sit on, because you
could go the other way too.
That,
sure, right.
Yes,
absolutely.
You could also argue that the recreational or medical marijuana is contaminating the hemp,
right,
and thereby increasing the THC content and violating the definition of the industrial hemp standard. Yes, I think this is something that hasn't received a lot of discussion within the state, certainly not as we march towards the legalization of recreational marijuana. But we're a very small state, and I'm not sure that we can have both industries succeed if everybody wants to grow outside.
Ooh. So who's got to give?
That's certainly not up to me. Again, you know, hemp can be grown inside, but it would depend on the purpose. So if you're talking about the extraction of the high-value CBD oil from the plant, then it might make sense to grow those crops indoors or in greenhouses. If we're talking about something for a fiber strain or something for the larger, you know, food security type issues, I don't think that indoor production would ever be able to meet the demand for that. So I'll let the policymakers draw their own conclusions about that. I'd certainly be happy to talk to them about some ideas how that could be approached. And I think that, you know, one of the easiest examples to point to would be the production of seed stock for other crops in the country, where we have essentially these appellation zones, areas where only certain things are allowed to be produced. And maybe that's one solution to the potential future problem of the recreational market and hemp coexisting within the state.
This is really interesting, but let's also talk about what hemp is being currently used for as it's being grown today. Listeners, here's one that might surprise you a little bit. Hemp guitars. Jay Burstein is a luthier who owns Bug Out Guitars in Randolph, and he's on the line with us now. Hi, Jay.
Hi, Jane.
So hemp guitars, they look like a regular guitar. How do they play?
They play well. They play very well and sound better than I initially thought they would.
So what made you think, oh, maybe I could use hemp instead of other wood?
Well, there's a movement in luthery. Tone woods, your traditional tone woods, are becoming harder and harder to get your hands on. And you're starting to see builders use alternative woods and reclaimed woods there. I also don't think that I have anything to really to offer the wooden guitar industry because it's being done so well by so many already. And I was working with composites and composite guitars, carbon fiber and whatnot, and I learned that people were doing similar things with flax and hemp, and I started exploring it a couple years ago and doing prototyping and having fantastic results, and it's a neat thing. It's sort of a anti-establishment thing, you know. I don't hear people talk about why hemp and marijuana was illegal in the first place. I think there's a lot of lessons to be learned there, even pertaining to today's political environment.
So, Jay, let me ask you, you said the guitar sounds better than you thought it would at first. Is there a different tonal quality that you can hear? You know, every wood has a different sound. So how would you characterize hemp?
Well, I'm making smaller instruments. They're sort of travel size. They are can't really be affected by weather and water and humidity and heat and dryness. It's a composite. And the fact that there's cellulose, I believe, this is my theory, in hemp, and there's also cellulose in the resin I'm using to bind the hemp, I'm getting some of that woody, throaty tones, a warmer tone than you would think of a composite guitar, a carbon fiber instrument, which is essentially a plastic. And carbon fiber is not really great for the environment either. So there's a lot of reasons to use hemp in this, and I was just experimenting, and I found out that I was onto something. And the more I do it, the better I get at it, and the more I realize I'm really onto something here. I've really struck on something special.
Well, thanks for telling us a little bit about it. Jay Burstein owns Bug Out Guitars in Randolph. Jay, thanks very much.
Thank you, Jane.
You know, hemp is used for rope, for clothing. We now know it's used for guitars, also for building materials. On the line with us now is Emily Payton. You might recognize her name as someone who's frequently involved in electoral politics. She's run for governor several times. She's also the founder and president of Hempfully Green. Nice to talk with you again, Emily.
Hey, Jane. Hi. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And what you are an advocate for is something called hempcrete, which maybe people can glean from the name is designed to act in place of concrete. Mm-hmm. Is anyone using hempcrete right now for building materials?
Yes, and let's clarify that it doesn't actually have concrete in it, which is a material that has a lot of embodied carbon in it. So it is being used in Canada. It's being used in the UK, in France, New Zealand. It's really a building material that is probably one of the most promising materials in terms of helping us to remedy climate change because it's carbon negative. And the U.S. is just beginning to see its first structures being built here.
And is it as strong and does it withstand as much as concrete?
Well, it is stronger in other ways. For example, where you would build in an earthquake-prone region, you would have a better structural sustainability in that sort of region. It goes in as a non-structural, non-load-bearing sort of material, but it hardens up around a stud structure into a stone-like material. And It sequesters carbon and turns to stone and lasts for centuries. So it has about 7 different qualities which make it superior to other building materials.
So we were talking earlier about how many people in Vermont are growing hemp, 96 or so, and they're growing it for different purposes, and maybe as much as 500 acres or a little bit more is being grown, or that's the aspirational total at any rate. Emily, are any people, are you seeing a future here for a hempcrete industry in Vermont where people could be growing directly for hempcrete?
Absolutely. I just came from the 7th International Building with Hemp Symposium up in Montreal, where we met a company that is the Just Biofiber, and they're developing what is essentially a very large Lego brick. And these Lego bricks are made from hempcrete and can be assembled by anybody and are structural and easily used. And if we had, we'd need about 6,000 acres of hemp, a fiber hemp in production to support a hemp biofiber plant. I mean, you know, a company stationed here. So when we're talking about building with local materials, hemp, the herd of the hemp which you use in the building material, coming from Vermont, we're going to need to put in numbers of acres to justify the expense of a processing plant. Until that time, we can import the hemp portion now from Colorado, soon from North Carolina, and it will still be carbon negative because of how much carbon the hemp plant sequesters during the growing season.
Well, it's all very interesting stuff. Emily Payton is founder and president of Hemp Fully Green. She's working on making hempcrete more of a building material in this country. Emily, thank you very much for talking with us.
Well, thank you, Jane.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Brian Voigt is a research professor at UVM's Rubenstein School of Environment and Natural Resources, where he's been looking at the cannabis industry. He's also involved himself as chief science officer for the Vermont Hemp Company. He's with us today talking about how this sector is shaping up in Vermont. One of the major ways that the cannabis plant is being used right now, and you start to see more and more companies cropping up using it, is CBD. We talked about this a little bit earlier. Cannabidiol, it's a component in the cannabis plant, and it's said to be a really good anti-inflammatory. It has not been vetted by the FDA, so companies are not allowed to make medicinal claims about it. But a lot of people are using it. It's used in everything from iced tea, as we heard, to sweets and treats. We'll be talking about those in a minute, to creams, lotions, tonics. Gordon is calling in from Pittsfield. Hi, Gordon. You use CBD?
Yes, I do. Thank you for taking my call. Yes, I suffered a bad work-related injury and was being prescribed opioid after opioid with basically no alternative whatsoever. And although, as you said, that the CBD is not allowed to be used or mentioned as a cure-all, I have some friends here locally at the Luce Farm in Vermont, which are some of the people that are, that are legally growing this, and they're making hemp honey. And I have started using that in other things through my physical therapist and alternative, and I found it works very, very well.
Gordon, I'm happy to hear you found some relief. That's nice to hear, and thanks for sharing your experience. Ashley is calling in from Elmore. Hi, Ashley. Go right ahead.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call. I just wanted to touch on the fact that the hemp industry in Vermont, as well as the cannabis industry in the United States, is really showing some promising standards of having women owning CBD and cannabis companies, that it's one of the only industries where the CEOs and CFOs of these cannabis companies, 36% of these leading cannabis companies are owned by women. And I want to just, as someone who also owns a women-owned and operated CBD company here in Vermont, Elm Mountain Therapeutics, I'm so happy to see that the gender barriers are really being removed from this industry, that it's letting women and men shine as equals. And I feel like that's a real powerful movement in a place like Vermont that is so forward-thinking, that there's so many women that have such great ideas, but they just don't know how to get into this industry. And our company is really trying to help other women in the industry and outside the industry get into the industry of cannabis and CBD and hemp in Vermont to show that we can all benefit from it. It's a female plant, and I think that it has some real wonderful, you know, as you touched on, you know, can't talk about, you know, any claims of curing or treating any disease, but I think that women are finding some serious relief from all their symptoms that happen at all stages of our lives. So,
well, Ashley, it's really interesting to hear about that, and thank you for sharing that and your experience, and especially interesting to hear in light of the reading I've been doing over the last few years on the racial barriers to entry in the legal recreational marijuana market and medicinal marijuana market and some of the socioeconomic barriers. So interesting, not directly speaking to that, but Ashley talking a little bit about maybe less of a gender barrier, at least in the CBD field. That's interesting to hear about. Thank you. I want to bring in another guest here as well. Andrew LeSturgeon is owner of Monarch and the Milkweed. It's a restaurant in downtown Burlington, and they're now selling some CBD-infused sweets. Andrew, welcome to the program. Thanks for being with us.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for inviting me. Happy to be here, part of a institution in Vermont. Thanks for having me.
So what are you making with CBD?
So currently we're making just a small line of edibles. We've got four or five different truffles, and they're exactly metered at 20 milligrams of CBD each. We also have a ice cream, and we can thank Donald Trump for some flavor inspiration. It's called Impeachment. It's a mint ice cream with peach jam folded into it, again, 20 milligrams. And we're R&Ding some marshmallows. We're going bean to bar soon. We've got quite the list of expansion in the next 2 to 4 weeks.
Why? Why CBD?
I've got a great team behind me. Go ahead.
So why CBD? What is it? I mean, if it's not for flavoring, what is the value as you see it?
Yeah. Well, I started working in dispensaries 4 or 5 years ago, introduced by my previous employer, Hen of the Wood, and have been in touch with dispensaries and working with them in the state of Vermont for 4 or 5 years. To be honest with you, about a year ago, I would have rolled my eyes at CBD. I was, and just like your listeners, maybe before the show existed or will be finished, were rolling their eyes at CBD and placed all the value in the THC part of the cannabis plant and industry, and quite the opposite now. We have realized and found that the demographic that is looking for CBD and looking to be a part of this, you know, once illegal, now turning legal market, both in the states and on a federal level, it reaches a larger demographic, and it's my opinion and the opinion of most of my colleagues that most, if not all, of the medicine exists in cannabidiol rather than THC.
So you're not just positioning yourself, Andrew, for the recreational market, sort of getting in there now so that you can be ready when it's legal.
We're doing very much of both. It's a stepping stone for THC, but in the process, we have realized it's a completely different market, completely different product with completely different results that people seek out separately from THC. So we lucked out. We're sort of, you know, up for two markets instead of one, which I thought a year ago it was just one, and that was THC and cannabis in general. And who knows what's going to happen. But I do know that it helps a great deal of people, and here at Monarch we sort of, you know, with the sophisticated, a little bit luxurious, you know, confections, sort of get that cannabidiol to people in a way that can be a little bit whimsical or fun rather than just a pill or a capsule or whatnot.
While I have you here, Andrew, let's go to Elizabeth, who's calling in from Burlington. Hi, Elizabeth.
Sure.
Go right ahead. You got a question?
Yeah. Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling to ask about CBD oil and how it manifests through the bloodstream, and whether or not when there are employee blood testing or any blood testing, it shows up as cannabis, because so many people are using it for pain these days.
Elizabeth, thanks for the question. Andrew, you may have some expertise in that. How would you answer, Elizabeth?
Yeah, I think she might be referring to how certain edibles or any cannabis product, and this show's about CBD and industrial hemp focus, we call it testing hot. And yes, if you don't start with an industrial hemp plant or a plant that has more than 0.3% THC in it, you risk, producing a product in the end that is higher in THC than what would be legal. We label our products with the exact milligrams of THC in addition to the 20 milligrams of CBD. There is a population in Vermont that gets drug tested, whether you work in public schools or a police officer or work for the state in any capacity. And we want those people to know that there is a very, very, very small yet legal trace amount of THC in our products that can be picked up with those tests, depending on when you take the CBD. And most products, to be fair, of our competitors have trace amounts of THC in them. And I think that's what she might be referring to. In the future, as soon as maybe a month or two from now, Monarch and the Milkweed will have the ability to produce and sell THC void completely edibles for the people who need those and want to incorporate those into their lives. Currently, we don't, but as the market unfolds and the demand increases, we can, you know, invest in pieces of equipment and partner with geniuses, frankly, in this state. There are several that are heading up laboratories and dispensaries. We're very lucky to be a part of some of these partnerships that we've been working on in the past couple of years. And we'll be able to produce edibles that are void of THC completely.
Hmm.
Does that help to answer that?
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Andrew. And thanks for being on the show. Andrew's the owner of Monarch and the Milkweed. It's a restaurant in downtown Burlington, as we talked about, serving CBD treats. Andrew, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, Jane.
Brian Voigt, we still have you here for another minute or two, and I'm curious. We've talked about a lot of different things here in this show, and it's been really interesting to me to see how, in many cases, in fact, a recreational marijuana market may be problematic for some of the legal markets that are already existing in Vermont, whether it's CBD or hemp that's being grown that has a maximum marijuana or THC amount. But when you look at the landscape, what do you see as our future and what needs to be done to move us into a good future here with cannabis?
Well, I think the producers of hemp and marijuana need to come together. We need to figure this out together and work out an approach that's going to make both industries sustainable in the longer term. I also think that there's so much that's not understood about the plant in general that additional research monies are really needed to understand if there's something that we're missing, something that could be beneficial to humans that we're missing, and move beyond just this stereotype of weed or pot as something you use to get high. We've heard any number of different uses. There's 26,000 different documented uses of the cannabis plant. We're barely scratching the surface with our knowledge. And so I think we need to continue moving that forward. And I think the last piece that I'd really advocate for is the potential for hemp to serve as a bioremediation tool to clean up brownfields in the state, to help improve water quality. And as Emily mentioned earlier, look at the potential for carbon sequestration within the plant as well.
You have a vision of it at the Vermont Yankee site, right?
I do. I think it would be an ideal test plot site to see what we could pull out of the soil. Hemp was grown at Chernobyl after the meltdown there. It was proposed as a remediation technique at Fukushima. So these are places that met disaster. We are fortunate never to have that happen in Vermont, but still think there's the potential for improved soil quality in the immediate vicinity of Vermont Yankee.
Well, it's been fascinating to talk with you. Brian Voigt is a research professor at the Rubenstein School at UVM and chief science officer for the Vermont Hemp Company. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Jane. Happy to be here.